You are listening to the IFH Podcast Network. For more amazing filmmaking and screenwriting podcasts, just go to ifhpodcastnetwork.com.
Welcome to the Indie Film Hustle Podcast, episode number 218. It's okay not to be okay, as long as you don't stay that way. Anonymous.
Broadcasting from the back alley in Hollywood, it's the Indie Film Hustle Podcast, where we show you how to survive and thrive as an indie filmmaker in the jungles of the film biz. And here's your host, Alex Ferrari.
Welcome, my Indie Film Hustlers, to another episode of the Indie Film Hustle Podcast. I am your humble host, Alex Ferrari. Today's show is sponsored by Rise of the Filmtrepreneur, how to turn your independent film into a profitable business. It's harder today than ever before for independent filmmakers to make money with their films, from predatory film distributors ripping them off to huckster film aggregators who prey upon them. The odds are stacked against the indie filmmaker. The old distribution model of making money with your film is broken, and there needs to be a change. The future of independent filmmaking is the entrepreneurial filmmaker or the filmtrepreneur. In Rise of the Filmtrepreneur, I break down how to actually make money with your film projects and show you how to turn your indie film into a profitable business. With case studies examining successes and failures, this book shows you the step-by-step method to turn your passion into a profitable career. If you're making a feature film, series, or any other kind of video content, the Filmtrepreneur method will set you up for success. The book is available in paperback, ebook, and of course, audiobook. If you want to order it, just head over to www.filmbizbook.com. That's filmbizbook.com. Today's show is also sponsored by Enigma Elements. As filmmakers, we're always looking for ways to level up production value of our projects and speed up our workflow. This is why I created Enigma Elements, your one-stop shop for film grains, color grading LUTs, vintage analog textures like VHS and CRT images, smoke, fog textures, DaVinci Resolve presets, and much more. After working as an editor, colorist, post, and VFX supervisor for almost 30 years, I know what film creatives need to level up their projects. Check out EnigmaElements.com and use the coupon code IFH10 to get 10% off your order. I'll be adding new elements all the time. Again, that's Enigma, E-N-I-G-M-A, elements.com. So today on the show, we are going to talk about algorithms and data to help you sell your movie. With two warriors that are going to war for you guys every day trying to find ways to help you make money with your movies, Liz Manischel and Jess Fuchsle from the Sundance Creative Distribution Fellowship are hard at work trying to figure out how to use data to help filmmakers sell their movie. So at Sundance, I sat down with them and talked a little bit about data gathering, what they're doing with their fellowship program as well, and what they're learning from filmmakers that are going through the program and hopefully going to be releasing and are releasing this information to the public, to other indie filmmakers, to help them get a better understanding of what it really takes to get their movie out there. And I also want to thank my partner, Media Circus PR, for co-producing the series of Sundance podcast. So without further ado, please enjoy my conversation with Liz and Jess from the Sundance Institute.
I'd like to welcome to the show
Liz Manischel
and Jess Fuchsle.
Thank you guys for coming in. Liz is a returning champion to our show.
I'm a three-peat, Alex.
You actually are one of the first three-peats to the show.
Yeah.
That is, and you're the first back-to-back guest ever in history of...
I'm really great.
And her humble. She's very, very humble. She's extremely humble as well. So everyone who's listened to the podcast before knows Liz works for Sundance. And now Liz, after the last podcast, what kind of reaction? I warned you.
Yeah.
I did warn you. You're just like, no, just give my email out. It'll be fine. Right. I'm like, Liz, are you sure? No, it's all good. What happened?
I got a lot of emails. So basically, I went on your podcast to publicize our fellowship, the Creative Distribution Fellowship at Sundance. And I think at the time we had like 30 applications, and now we have 120, nice. I think. And those don't even count the draft. So we probably have around 200.
That's awesome.
So thank you.
You're welcome.
But I still want people to email me. I'm like a glutton for punishment. I really like email. So
I'll put your email in the show notes as well.
I'm so lonely. All right. So.
Good, good. So we brought some success and hopefully going to help some film get out
there.
Thank you. And we'll talk a little bit more about that, what you do as well. Now, Jess, what do you do at the all-powerful Sundance?
So I am with Liz in the Creative Distribution Initiative. Mm-hmm. And I manage education and research, which is kind of a really interesting hybrid right now, especially with where the market is at and the different trends that are going on in distribution. But basically what I do is I work with data, all the data we can get access to, and figure out ways we can craft educational resources for filmmakers that help them find more sustainable avenues, specifically within the distribution space.
And I think that's something that's so under talked about is sustainability as a career.
Mm-hmm.
You know, filmmaking, and you know, you're a filmmaker, we're all filmmakers, we've all made, you know, films and stuff. And you know, you push everything out to that one movie, and that's the thing. And if it doesn't pop and make you a millionaire, then what? And I think that's the model. It's like this kind of lottery ticket model.
Yeah.
That's horrible.
It's very unhealthy.
It's extremely unhealthy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you can't sustain a career doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what you guys are trying to do is maintain, like, look, guys, you can't look at this as one project. You got to look at this as a career, next 5, 10, 15 years. So we talked a little bit about what you were doing in regards to data collection.
Mm-hmm.
That's really interesting. What are you doing with data collection to help filmmakers?
Sure. So we're starting with these really robust case studies of our two inaugural fellows that are going through the Creative Distribution Fellowship right now. That's Columbus and Unrest.
Mm-hmm.
And we've followed them throughout their entire process, right? And part of the stipulations of the fellowship is that our fellows are completely open with us and honest and willing to share their information. So we've been on weekly calls with them since day one.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very much like that's our first, those are going to be the first big pieces coming out of our department that are very data driven. So talking about how much they spent on P&A and how that was divided. Was it majority PR? Was it majority digital marketing? Certain things like that. And then even breaking out within those spaces, where did the money go to?
Mm-hmm.
And then also just the returns that they're seeing on the different revenue streams. So theatrical and TVOD, and what was their strategy? What was their windowing strategy? So really breaking it down to all of the granular details.
Mm-hmm.
So filmmakers can glean insights from that and, you know, pick and choose what they want to take from that as far as what helps them the most. And then from there, we're also working on something called the Transparency Project. So the Transparency Project started a couple of years ago. It was a very ambitious tool where we were basically trying to get information on the performance of films to feed this tool, and then filmmakers would be able to use it to get sample projections on their future work.
That would be amazing.
Yes, that would be incredible.
That
would be fantastic.
But we're not doing
But that's completely not happening.
I will say this. I have a tech background. I was a coder for about 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a really ambitious thing to do. And there are a lot of companies out there right now who are starting to do that work. And doing it well,
mm-hmm.
you know, and finding the sources. And so, you know, I think as an institute in our department specifically really felt that the best way we could transform the Transparency Project would be finding ways to craft educational resources that aren't just driven by anecdotal information,
mm-hmm.
but are driven in concrete facts, you know, the data that we have access to as an institute. We're very fortunate, right?
Mm-hmm.
We support a lot of incredible filmmakers. We see a lot of different models come in and out of the institute. So how can we use that information to really open the doors up for filmmakers and help them figure out what's going to be the best avenue for their project? So the Transparency Project 2.0 is going to be a collection of resources, you know, case studies, you know, kind of like where the market is at, the trends that we're seeing, those types of things on a daily basis. So it's going to be like your data feed coming out of Sundance.
Why is it so difficult to get information about distribution? We had that conversation.
Yeah.
You know, you were so, you know, wonderful to basically be an open book and very transparent.
I wasn't that open though. Like,
but you wanted more. You wanted to do more, but
I wanted to say more.
But the distributor wouldn't let you do any
more. Well, and they let me share as much as I could. But when you sign a distribution deal, normally that there's that confidentiality clause.
Mm-hmm. And like, I don't understand, like, I guess it's because
they protect them and maybe to protect the filmmaker too. I'm not going to say it's completely self-serving.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there was something protective about the distributor.
Mm-hmm.
We tend to villainize distributors every now and then in our department. And so every now and then I want to be careful. We're just trying to villainize the really shitty ones.
Mm-hmm.
So some really, So I'm still coming.
I'm glad you're so candid. I appreciate it.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. And now back to the show.
Some and good are, distributors might be very nurturing and may want to protect the filmmaker.
I've been in the game a while as well, and I've had my day with distributors. I'm going to say 9 out of 10 are the shitty model, and there is that one every once in a while that is great, and that's sad. But it's also a layover from a legacy distribution model from the 80s and the 90s.
Old world
distribution, where this whole new aggregator and self distribution and having access to this kind of data that they held behind the walls for so long, and now we have access to that kind of stuff. And I think it's where everything is eventually going to go.
Well, it's still a pretty sheathed culture, and what we're trying to do is. If you do our fellowship, which I like to plug as often as possible.
Please, no worries.
If you do our fellowship, you're, like Jess was saying, you're required to give us information.
Sure.
And because we are not the distributor, the filmmaker and Sundance can be very open and public about all the data. Mm-hmm. Whereas if we were taking a distribution fee or we were a distributor, obviously we couldn't do such things like that.
Right.
And we're a nonprofit. So we're motivated to support, we're mission-based, we're motivated to support the filmmaker.
Now, so I've heard so much about the Sundance Institute over the years, as this kind of like ivory tower thing for filmmakers. And I know you guys laugh because you're inside the ivory tower.
We are.
But it's really not ivory. It's
I know the reality. The reality of what it is and what the myth is are two different things. Because if you put the word Sundance in front of anything, filmmakers, independent filmmakers, that's why you got so many emails. Can you get me in? Can you get me into this? What can you do? What can you do? By the way, just so everybody knows, they have no power of getting your movie into Sundance.
We don't.
Whatsoever.
We're so sorry.
They know no one. They can get nothing happening. Okay? So please, if you email,
email us
to talk about other things, but that is not one of the things you should talk about.
We genuinely love getting emails. That is something that we love.
No other department enjoys it we do.
No, people find it very weird how much we ask people to email us. So
how big is the department to be building the department?
This is two-thirds of the department.
So two-thirds of the department. So you guys just like, I don't want to talk to you anymore. I want to read emails. Basically. So we're talking about opening up the data of helping filmmakers. Mm-hmm. And, one thing that Facebook has done extremely well is they've created basically the most powerful marketing tool in the history of man.
Yeah.
Whether love them or hate them. Mm-hmm. And there's feet on both sides on that. The information that they have on people is remarkable. And I think it would be wonderful to be able to have even a scotch of that information about the filmmaking process, about how distribution and things like that. Is that something you're kind of going after as well?
Yeah. We're actively trying to get data from multiple different sources, right? So we want to be working with distributors. Again, sometimes it might sound like we're villainizing distributors, but we really aren't. Mm-hmm. I think the way that we see it right now is that something needs to change within the industry in order for it to become more sustainable and for more people to be able to have a sustainable living. So it's about everyone at this point. So we're trying to encourage people to be transparent, the sales agents, the distributors, everybody that's in the game. We want to work with them. Mm-hmm. We want to help them. We want to find these sustainable avenues. So, and we're also collecting all of the information within the Institute as far as the projects that are coming in and out of there. And then also training filmmakers on how to use data, how to use that Facebook data, how to audience
target your audience, how to find an audience, how to identify an audience.
That's a major part of our fellowship is a digital marketing spend. We're giving a digital marketing grant for our fellowship, and we want them to use that money towards things like Facebook ads so that they can better target and figure out an efficient way to reach those audiences.
And you guys can get that data as well.
Well, yeah.
Obviously. Well, do you agree though, like you were saying that making it more sustainable and the industry has to change. I feel that a lot of ways, it's kind of like the old school film school model, which is the, let's just pop them out as much as they can because even coding. Or, visual effects, for God's sakes, that they beat up visual effects artists. I'm going to beat you until you're done. And then there's five other guys waiting or five other girls waiting to take your spot. And I think that's the mentality with filmmakers in general in this industry. Would you agree with that? Because like, oh, like he's going to make a movie or she's going to make a movie and that's great, but I got three other guys. You know, there's so much content that there's so many people that they don't care about nurturing a sustainable career because there's just such a gluttony of product. Mm. What do you think?
It depends on what platform you're talking about, because I make my films outside of the system. Right. I crowdfund, I use equity, and I don't rely on any sort of establishment or studio funding. And so therefore I have full control over everything.
Sure.
But there are platforms that are actually really kind to artists. Okay. And, you know, I think a lot of that is in the digital space. Mm-hmm. It's those old world, stuck in the past distributors and production companies who may be a little bit more assembly line, like the way you're thinking about, but I don't know if that's what.
No. I think that's absolutely right. But I also think that it's not just about using data when you're in the throes of already having created your film and finding your audience that way. But I also think, you know, maybe content creators can also start to use that beforehand, right?
Yes.
And test what they're looking to make, right? I think that that's another thing. A lot of filmmakers, and this is just a personal opinion of mine, I think sometimes filmmakers jump in head first with an idea and then get it done and then realize that...
No, stop it.
I'm in favor of that kind of way of thinking.
I know. This is the one area where Liz and I have different viewpoints.
But I agree. That does work. To a certain extent. With a budget.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You jumping in at $100,000 with that mentality, you're done. Mm-hmm. You jump in with a $5,000 micro, $10,000 micro, have come fun. Go do what you gotta do.
Or making movies so hard that sometimes a delusion is necessary. Delusion, I agree with that.
You have to be a little bit delusional in this business as a general statement.
Mm-hmm. Faith. Maybe faith is a better word.
Delusion.
A combination of the two.
To be able to even do anything in this business, I feel that there has to be that. You know, just to go down the arts. And arts in general. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I still remember telling my dad, like, I'm going to go be a filmmaker. And he's like, what's that? Well, how are you going to make money? I'm like, well, I can be a PA. And that was my business plan.
Really, I never got to be a PA. I tried to be a PA. No one wanted me to be a PA.
I was a PA and I learned quickly that it stunk. So I'm like, post. I'm going to sit in that room.
That's where I sent my boyfriend. I was like, you'll like post.
I sat in a room. I'm like, I'm going to get carpal tunnel. It's going to be air conditional. It's going to be great.
People are 20 years later,
I'm still there.
Right. Posts were the nicest people
It depends. I've been around a lot of posts.
Okay, maybe I'm wrong.
You were the client. You were a client, Liz. Don't forget when you walked into Post.
Well, I was an editor. I trained as an editor in film school.
Okay.
And my partner is in Post. And like I was like, you should work in post-production because everyone's like, they're more kind, they're more calm, there's like less breathing, you know.
There's less stress, but they can be stressful depending on the
situation.
I know,
I'm like saying these things as if I know. I mean, really, yeah, it's probably horrible just like everything else. Everything's horrible.
So why does anyone even do this? Why does anyone even do this?
Because we need art and we need
And we need it more now than ever, without question.
Yeah,
and you know what? It's a calling.
Yeah.
But the thing is, and that's one of the missions I have with Indie Film Hustle is I want to show people how to survive and thrive. I want to show artists how to survive and thrive because I'm so tired of getting filmmakers just getting eaten up and spit out by the system so much. Yeah. I've seen it throughout my career. I've seen people who try to do something like, oh, it's too hard. I'm like, I'm sorry. You're not cut out for this. Yeah. Not at this level. You're going to have to try to do something else or be another part of the cog in the wheel.
Yeah.
But it's difficult. Mm-hmm. It's difficult. Even as easy as it is now, to make a movie, as they say, much easier than it was 10 years ago or 20 years ago, it's still extremely difficult. I think the challenges just change.
Yeah.
Because before it wasn't the entry point problem was the cost of the gear. Now you can shoot it on your iPhone. Now it's distribution and marketing.
Yeah.
Hey,
what do you guys know about that? So what?
A little bit of knowledge.
So take me through a standard project, if you can, with distribution. How do you approach, like, let's say I'm a filmmaker, I have a $100,000 movie, which I actually literally know five of them right now that have that, that I'm talking to and consulting to, that have a movie that, you know, $500,000 or below. I have one with $500,000. God bless. We're working with them. There's like, okay, what do we do? And they literally told me, they're like, I don't think we know that we're not going to make our money back. We just want to make as much back as we can.
That's a good start.
And it was a great movie. It's a great movie, but they're like, okay, what can we do? What's our strategy? How can we do this? And we're working with them on that. But What would your advice be with, like, you know, and I know it's case by case, but like, what's the basic things that you need to know to get your movie out there?
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. And now back to the show.
I mean, we're big proponents of people starting to think about marketing and distribution before the film is done.
Amen.
Because when you can start wrapping your head around that and starting to put, you know, see your film through those lenses, then it just makes the process easier down the line. Unfortunately, a lot of the filmmakers that we speak to, it's not the case. But I think that this is a change in mentality. I think it will shift.
Now, what is the cause of that, do you think? Why is
they're
it not
too busy?
Yeah.
Or is it just something that's not taught in film school? Is it just something that's not focused on? Because it isn't taught in film school.
Well, obviously. Sure. And that's, you know, I didn't go to film school, and that's
it's
one thing that, yeah, that's
not
one,
at all.
That's one thing that lives, yeah.
Exactly.
It's not done in film school. I'm trying to like create a class so that I could teach at USC.
Like marketing, so, distribution, social media.
But the thing is that I think so many times in film school, it's about being creative. It's about being the creator. Mm-hmm. It's about being the filmmaker. And there's been this separation for so long where distribution and marketing is very pragmatic. It's very business minded, and that the filmmaker needs to hand their film off at that point and, you know, put it into somebody else's hands. What we're trying to get people to understand is that distribution and marketing is a creative process.
Yes.
It can be fun. Oh, it can be, cool. it's not a one size fits all, even though so many times, you know, we have that preconceived notion, because I think that's the cycle that we see perpetuated so much in the media and so on and so forth. But it's starting to become a very creative process. There's a lot of different avenues you can take. We're not trying to evangelize self-distribution. We're just trying to answer questions with what we're doing.
And I don't think self-distribution is for everyone.
It's not.
You got a $1 million movie. Self-distribution is a beast.
Mm-hmm,
like, you really have to be on your game to make your money back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at a certain business model, it makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, even at the $500,000 mark, it's tough.
Mm-hmm.
Even $100,000, you know, movie to self-distribute, like straight up, like I'm just going to put it out myself, market it myself, pitch it to Hulu and Netflix myself. You really have to understand what you're doing.
It's a lot, and it's a huge resource investment. It's not just budgetarily an investment, but it's a huge investment of time, you know?
Something we're trying to spread is that it's not just self-distribution, right? Like, we use the word self-distribution.
Yeah,
sure.
It's a team, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we're saying the films that we work with, we encourage them to hire publicists and digital marketing specialists. And
if they want to do a theatrical booker,
and the entire team, we don't expect the filmmakers we work with to do it all themselves. And it'd be very hard for any filmmaker to do it all themselves. So we understand that at any level.
Right.
I think if filmmakers can really sit down, like going into the distribution process, like even if they didn't start from day one thinking about it, if they could just, you know, have like a really honest conversation with themselves. And I know this sounds cheesy, but do like a pros and cons list of the different options that you have in front of you,
Absolutely.
You know? And then from there, you can really see like, you know, okay, do I want to take a jump and maybe do this myself? Because maybe I feel like I'm the only one who really knows this film. I know how I could reach an audience. I see how I could potentially market it. Okay, if that's really the option that you want to take, then let's start with budget. You know, how much do you have to put forward towards this? You know,
exactly.
who are you trying to reach, and what are the best avenues to reach those people? You know, and then if you decide that you do want to go through the distributor route, one thing that a very simple piece of advice that Liz gives all the time, but I love it so much, and it has to do with sales agents and distributors, is if you get an offer or you find that there's a distributor that's interested, just do your research. You know, look at their catalog.
And call those
filmmakers. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And call those filmmakers. See what their relationship was like with this distributor. You know, maybe they had a great relationship. And
did
then maybe it's like, yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
maybe they didn't talk to
dish, right?
Yeah.
Ooh. They will dish.
We are like a sewing circle. We are like an old sewing circle. We will dish. If there's nothing, I mean, honestly, filmmaker that's been screwed over. Ooh.
Mm-hmm.
Hell hath no fury.
Hell have no fury like a filmmaker screwed. And they will, just from the top of the mountain, will say it. Is it true, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, it's amazing. And I've had people call me about certain producers' reps or certain things because I was under movies. I'm like, don't even do it.
The same thing happens for crew members. We have our own internal recommendation system where we say, I worked with this person or I would never work with this person. It's the same thing.
Right. But the stakes are much higher when you're giving away your $200,000.
If you have a bad AD, it's all over, right? So
especially when they don't you love the yellers? Oh, those are...
I do actually like the yellers.
That's wrong answer, Liz.
I just snap to it. I'm like, whatever you say.
I can't stand yellers. I just like, stop yelling, dude. We're all professionals here. I mean, come on, stop it. But you like your yell. Okay, now we all know.
I just like Liz likes ADs yelling, that ADs. Are like really, you know, well, you can have a strong AD presence. You know,
you can have a strong AD presence.
I don't want them to let me get away with anything. Like, I want like the tension and I want to fight for things and I want.
I see your creative process now.
Yeah, it comes out in chaos.
I see your creative process now.
This is not therapy, Liz. All right.
So when you were on set, Liz, as a child.
I want to go back to something you said about how filmmakers can just start getting involved in marketing distribution just in the beginning stage. And, you know, we talk in these very grand statements about, you know, general things about marketing distribution, but it could start with a Facebook post or a Twitter post and just little things encourage.
A poll.
Mm-hmm. But like we encourage, you know, say I or we instead of the film's title, like make it personal, make it human, make it authentic, make as many jokes as you can make, like just avoid being robotic.
Yeah, never underestimate funny.
Yeah, funny is really,
Underestimate funny.
Yeah.
Or just memes. Memes, they haven't gone away yet. Memes I've been waiting for them to disappear. They're still here.
And inspirational quotes.
Yes.
Inspirational quotes and memes.
There's a lot of free, easy resources just to grow audiences at your fingertips.
Just if you could just, once you identify your audience, you can feed that audience the content that they're looking for. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have to be your content. It could be other people's content.
And start with your network first. You know, if you're scared, start with your friends and family, just like because I consult on crowdfunding campaigns. You always start with your friends and family first, and then you expand beyond, right? So,
well, I mean,
same thing here.
When I launched Indie Film Hustle, when I had literally nothing, I just launched the website and the podcast. I had the mentality like in a year and a half, depending on how big my audience is, I'm going to crowdfund my feature. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what I did. A year and a half later, I was like, you know, I'm going to crowdfund my little micro budget film, This Is Meg, and it worked out. Because it was a year and a half plan. See, not a lot of filmmakers think like that. Mm-hmm. Not a lot of filmmakers think long term. Mm-hmm. Like, you know what? In a year, I'm going to do this, but it's going to take ball busting work until that year comes around. And it just kind of worked out that way. But they have to start. Do you agree that they start thinking long term?
I think they don't think long term because I did the same thing as for my first feature, but I don't think long term because the data is not there to tell them how long it takes to put a film together, how long it takes to crowdfund, how long it just takes to do all these. I can't speak. Do all of these things. Yeah. The three sips I've had. So, I mean, again, not to bring it too circular and be too self-promotional.
Yes. But the Sundance Institute, what?
But our case study, I mean, the whole point of these case studies, the whole point of what we're doing is to be like, hey, filmmakers, this information has been hidden from you forever. Mm-hmm. So let's just tell you how long it takes, how much it takes, what financial resources you need.
Like how much is a real Facebook buy?
Mean? Yeah.
Like what is it?
Yeah.
That's a big, like, because a lot of people are like, oh, I'm going to do social media. I'm going to do some buys. I'm like, how much do you have? I've got $100.
That actually will take you far. I did three ads and it totaled $40.
Right.
Yeah. I mean,
but I think in the scope of what you're like, she's like, that's lovely. Yeah.
No.
For people who can't see this and listening to it, Jess just looked at her and goes, that's lovely. With her eyes.
I believed her.
With $100, depending on the kind of movie it is, like, you know, if you have a $500,000 movie, $100 ain't going to do a whole lot. $5,000 is not going to do a lot, but it can if you do it correctly and you're going to spend $100 to $500 just figuring out what works.
Yes, exactly.
And that's something that they can't understand sometimes. It's a different language.
It's absolutely a different language.
We speak the same language, so you and all of us can have a conversation about it. But
Maybe not me, but I will try. I will try to keep up the whole time. I'll nod a lot.
It's tough. Mm-hmm. I completely understand. And this is an example I like to use. Before I started coding, I knew how to turn my computer on and type on it. And that was it. And I took a boot camp and it was like a crazy 10 weeks of my life. Mm-hmm. But that just proved to myself that, oh, this is accessible. Once you get over a certain hump, it's accessible, you know?
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. And now back to the show.
And so we really encourage filmmakers to just take a deep breath. Read our articles. We actually, one of the first ones that I released was basically just breaking down all of digital marketing terms. So like, what is a...
So please break down a few.
So what is a...
CP something.
There you
CPM.
Go.
CPM.
That is a cost per metric, right? Uh-huh. So you're either basing it off of cost per click, which is how much does it cost when every time somebody clicks on it. It is.
That was the back in the day. That was the way to do it. But now.
That's still a thing.
Google Ads. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's still a thing in Facebook. Okay. You can go for link clicks, or you can go for impressions, which is cost per impression is basically like 1,000 eyeballs, right?
Right.
Every time
your
ad
to
reaches.
Make sure that they click on it.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, we've taken some time to break these things down and try to help filmmakers understand that this is accessible to them. These are tools that they all have at their fingertips. And it does take a certain amount of testing. But that, and you know, in the tech world, testing is like the foundation of it all,
of course,
right? And that is a very creative process, right? It's trial and error. It's figuring out the little tweaks that you need to make in order to hit the right people. And so I think filmmakers are missing out when they don't play with these technologies, because you can get super creative with some of the stuff that you do, mm-hmm. right? You look at the 30-second spots you have and you're like, okay, how can I slice this into a 10-second spot that's going to grab somebody's attention like that and be like, I have to watch this, right?
And you should have something in the first frame that grabs your attention.
Exactly. So it's like playing around with that. It's like a game, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, how can you continually optimize to, you know, to reach more points, quote unquote? Mm-hmm. But it's a very creative process. We had a really great example is, you know, one of our fellowship films, the director got involved in the social media campaign, and made some assets, made some quick snippets of behind the scenes footage. And that did gangbusters on their social media campaign.
Because he was the one who knew the film best.
Yeah. He knew the film best, and his fans immediately knew. They're like, oh yeah, you know, this is like, this is it, you know? And so having those light bulb moments, I think, are very rewarding. And I think filmmakers need to know that is very much prevalent in the digital marketing space, you know?
Did you guys ever hear of a movie called Kung Fury?
Yeah.
Kung Fury, right?
I did, yeah.
It was a short film.
Right.
So it was a movie done by, I think, Swedish filmmakers, uh-huh. if I'm not mistaken. And they made a 80s, like such an homage to the 80s. But like to the umpth degree, you know, it was a short film. They raised like about $150,000 for the short, and they knew their audience. That's like 400. That's 4 or 5 features.
I mean, for you, it's like 20 features. I'm just saying.
But they made this short, and it was visual effects. There was dinosaurs. There was a giant Thor. They went back in time. It was brilliant for the audience that they were going after, sure. which was people who really love the 80s, which mm-hmm. is a broad.
And Stranger Things.
Yeah.
And
they
tapped into that way before Stranger yeah. Things, into the nostalgia of it all.
Right.
But they were, and then they had t-shirts and like leather jackets. They had VHS release of it, limited
which
edition. Yes, they did.
So Stranger Things is just copying.
And pretty much they're copying the Swedish Kung Fury. Yes. LPs. It was amazing.
Cool.
And they made tons of money, but their social media was just on point. Mm-hmm. They were just doing mm-hmm. constant memes, mm-hmm. constant video, stuff like that. But mm-hmm. they knew who their audience was.
Yeah.
And it's a short film.
Mm-hmm. But also it can reflect your personality. So if you're mm-hmm. like a laconic soul who's just really more poetic and really more
sure.
drawn to images, then just post a few photos. I mean, like, I think the other thing is that there's a lot of pressure can be built up about, I got to be clever. I got to post 5-7 times a day. I have to
write, it gets a bit much.
But you could do it suited to your personality.
It's about an authentic voice.
Yeah.
Your audience is going to know when it's not an authentic voice and you're just trying to fit into a mold.
And yeah, if you fake it, they'll smell it.
Oh, they sniff it out a mile away.
Maybe in 90-something, they wouldn't have sniffed it. But now, we're so savvy.
We're not in a time anymore where you can just get away with cookie-cutter templates. You know, it's not like people have so much content in their face on a daily basis. So what's going to set you apart? It's going to be your voice. And you have to make sure that that's your own.
You have to be authentic. And I think that's in general with all your marketing. If you're authentic 100%. To what you're trying to be and who you are, it's going to do well, at least with the audience that you're trying to reach.
Yeah.
As opposed to if you're just like, you know, the sleazy madman marketing guy who's just trying to, you know, pigeonhole like the people who love Manhattans. And, you know, yes, and we made the movie and we made this movie just about how the Manhattan was made. Uh-huh. you say, are you looking for investments? Yeah. Equity? Do we have equity?
Yeah. Tell us more.
But yeah, I think authenticity is such a good, and you were saying it's so much fun doing it. I've learned so much about digital marketing with Indie Film Hustle. I mean, it's insane how much I've learned doing that all myself.
Yeah.
And putting all the content out. And I think one of the reasons why it resonates with people is because I'm authentic. I'm like, this is
me.
Well,
and it's you.
Mm-hmm, yeah, and I'm out front. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm not hiding behind a logo or I'm like literally screaming with a gun that looks like it's a Super 8 camera.
Well, and also like when I emailed you, you emailed me back within like two hours.
Yeah, something like
really
that.
Quickly.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the other thing. It's like you're reachable, you're approachable. I mean, that's also part of it too. It's like what I hate about I love old Hollywood and I love the old world distribution to a degree because it's responsible for some of my favorite films.
Sure.
But what I hate about it is that wall that puts up between audience and artist. And so all we're trying to do is say, break down that wall as often as possible. So
tear that wall
another
down.
Thing we suggest is to Mr. Gorbachev,
tell that word
out. Like on your website, this is something I learned from my mentor, Peter Broderick, is like, don't do an info at, do Alex at Indie Film Hustle, you know, whatever it is so that people know they're reaching you. Just all these ways to make yourself at everyone's fingertips. It's a little bit of a pressure, but it's still, it's a way that you make new friends, you communicate with your audience directly, and you're building a community.
Now, what are kind of like some of the, you know, mistakes you see filmmakers make when they come into your arena?
Silence.
Crickets. There's crickets, actually,
I think sometimes being too precious.
Oh, yeah.
And I know that is really, I just want to clarify, I am not a filmmaker, so I don't want people to think that I am. I don't want to be a poser by any means.
What? Get out. Get out.
I know. I am so sorry. Film has been in my life in many different capacities through my professional career. And I used to work on film sets, so I'm very attuned to it. But I'm not a filmmaker.
You're not on trial. It's okay.
but, you know, I think that I totally understand this is your baby, right? This is something that you've been working on for, months, years, decades, you know.
Yes, I've been involved with some movies I've been worked on for decades.
Yeah, I mean, it's a thing. It happens. But I think we're in a space right now that is so rapidly changing.
Damn.
that if you're not willing to put yourself out there and try new things and figure out what works, that's just going to be a detriment to the future of your career. So I think sometimes filmmakers really hold on to their work and say, I don't want to work with this unless it's like exactly 100% what we think we need to do, you know, rather than saying, let's just throw a little bit out there and see what works, you know, especially with these digital marketing campaigns.
That's old world of distribution. They're told, don't share anything, don't show anything.
Mm-hmm.
Keep it quiet. Keep the secret sauce.
No. Right. Part of growing your audience is seeping out of information over time.
Totally, totally. And it goes back to that authentic voice too, right? It's like, again, I think directors also need to be more in the forefront, right? People need to know who they are and, you know, what they stand for, and not just through their work, but by the way they represent their film and by the way they put their film out there in the world. And so I just encourage filmmakers not to be scared, you know, like,
Hitchcock it.
Yeah, exactly.
You got to Hitchcock it. You got to get out there and be in front. You know, I mean, he was the master at that. Mm-hmm. He's the one who started the whole promoting of the director.
Yeah.
On it. He was the first superstar director pretty much. Mm-hmm. And now I think honestly, after Tarantino, when he came out in the 90s here at Sundance, he became the rock and roll, that kind of rock and roll director that everybody's like, oh, now it's cool to be a director. Now everybody wants to be a director. Mm-hmm. But you also, do you agree that it's not only being precious, but also expectation sometimes?
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
What do you mean my movie's not going to make $10 million and open in 5,000 seats?
There's a flip side of that, right? Yeah. So I call that filmmaker delusion. And I talk about that because I have filmmaker delusion.
We all have a little bit of it.
But you need that to make the movie. You need filmmaker delusion.
But then you need to stop it.
Well, you need to stop it after you get your first rejections. You know what I mean? Because you could make $10 million. You could get into Sundance. You could be an overnight success.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. And now back to the show.
But then once the evidence starts coming in, then you reevaluate and you rejigger your expectations. We're not dream killers here.
We might not be dream killers, but the industry is. It's the marketplace will tell you, period, what it is. And that's the brutality of this industry and this business in general. And like filmmakers who are these gentle artists sometimes are not prepared and their skin is so thin that the first time someone knocks them down, they're like,
you need to build up yours.
You've got to build it up.
Goes back to like, why are filmmakers disillusioned? And a lot of that has to do because they don't have access to information. Mm-hmm. You know, they just see these record deals being made and, but that's not
the reality.
No, it's not the reality.
Well, it's also, I think, the delusion, I call it the mariachi effect. You know, everyone thinks that.
I love the mariachi effect that you give everything for your film.
Which is wonderful.
Yeah.
It's great.
God, I'm like the romantic in this.
I'm a big fan of mariachi. I'm a big fan of Robert and what he did. But I think that is not a model to follow in the sense of, wait, Liz, calm down. Wait.
I tried to sell my eggs. Wait. I was working on
it. No, but like the Kevin Smiths, the Clerks, the Slacker, that whole time in the 90s, where it was these lottery tickets literally being handed out. All you had to do is make a movie, get into Sundance, and for lack of a better term, at the time, Harvey would walk down with a check, and that at the time was a big thing.
Right.
And life was good. You move up to the Hollywood Hills and you start making millions of dollars and you're good. That is not a business model.
Right.
That's what I'm trying to say. Yes, give all to your movie. Do everything you can to make your movie happen, but also don't mortgage your house.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You have three kids at home. Don't mortgage your house. Be smart about it. Right. Build up to something like that. Do a few micro budgets.
That's why I'm such in favor of micro budget.
Try. Go out, go make a $5,000 movie. Go do the Duplass Brothers. Do something like that.
Yeah.
As opposed to, rolling the dice.
Or, what I do is I make films as a hobby. And when I say it's a hobby, it doesn't mean it doesn't take my whole heart and I'm, obsessively thinking about it every single day. It just means that I have a day job and, in the mornings and in the evenings, I work on the film.
I think one of our people here working with us, Adam, said a wonderful statement is like, when you make a movie like, for $500,000 with private equity or, someone wrote a check or something like that, it's basically gambling, but hidden with the guise of art, which I think is a great analogy, a great statement to say, because it is.
Yeah.
You write a $500,000 check.
Oh, it's a massive gamble.
It's you're rolling the dice, and you're not a studio that can handle, a hit.
But still that person, that's the other thing. It's like, you feel indebted to your investors and you want to make your investors happy, but the investors are cogent, intellectual, they're capable of making decisions.
Yes.
And it's their decision to put $500,000 into your movie.
I agree with that.
You can't take on the weight of the world.
No, you can't. But there's also delusions. There's investor delusion.
Let them have it and then let them give me money to make my movie.
I love you, Liz. I absolutely love you.
Awesome. Well, this went well.
This went. Drink a little more Manhattan. have another sip of your Manhattan.
All right.
So, finally, I'm going to ask you a few questions. I ask all of my guests. What is the lesson that took you guys the longest to learn in the film industry or in life? If you didn't see this at home, Jess's eyes just widened. Deer.
How much time do you have?
These cards will run at least another couple hours, right? Yeah, we're good. All right. Okay. Yeah. So
All right. This is really turning into therapy, isn't it?
That's really hard.
That's
you answered this before, didn't you, Liz?
No. I don't know. If I did, I don't remember my answer.
Okay. If you can't answer, if you can't, we'll move on.
But we want to give a right answer. I think that's the thing. We could give an answer, but
it's just going to be online forever. So just please.
Cool.
All right. Yeah, that thing called the internet.
Yes, it doesn't forgive. No, I'm joking.
Gosh, I don't know. There's so many things that I feel like I could say to the point where I'm like at a loss for words. And I'm still trying to work through a lot professionally, and I probably always will be. But I think a big part is just letting go. It's really hard. I think I very much have this perfectionist mentality to the point where when I feel passionate about something and somebody doesn't understand that passion, it really gets to me in a, like in an emotional way, like a visceral way. And so I think that's been a big thing, is that we are all different human beings and we all have, you know, different philosophies. And if somebody doesn't get why I'm passionate about something, that's okay. You know, it's okay. I don't need to waste my energy on wondering why they don't understand my passion. So
that's a really good
for
answer.
Marketing and distribution at Sundance Institute.
Good one. That was a great one. I liked that. Cool. I liked that. Cool. Great, great, great. Yeah.
Liz, no pressure.
I mean, I don't think this is the answer, but it's an answer.
Sure.
And it's as a filmmaker, I think there are a lot of fears and worries that are in our heads. Mm-hmm. There's expectations, all these things that we talked about today. And I think just saying them out loud or writing them down, as like banal as that sounds, as did I use the word banal? I don't know.
I think you did.
It's like my 30
second
word.
That word has ever been used on the podcast.
It sounded banal. Convincing.
It was
to
convincing
me.
To me.
Well, then,
I'm
that's what I meant to say.
I'm impressed.
Banal.
I'm impressed.
As you know, I was going to say pedestrian. This is just going well. You know, as lame as that sounds, it's like just saying it out loud reminds you that it's, your fears are ridiculous and that you should just go forth with what you want. Absolutely. I mean, sometimes your paranoias get like locked up and start like creating delusions. And so I'm just saying, like, as a filmmaker, if there's filmmakers out there, like, we're here. We want to support you. Email us and all of your fears and anxieties. Just write them all out to us, and we'll see how we can.
Oh, you guys are like
either verify or
the entire
vilify
film industry.
Them.
We
you
try.
Guys are therapy for the entire.
It's
film
so
industry.
Silly, but we love that. We like to do that.
Yeah. So basically, what you're saying is, life is short. Go for it.
Well, absolutely.
That's
yeah.
basically the totally. Encompassing.
When it comes to filmmaking,
yes.
When it comes to other things, I mean, genocide, no.
No.
But like other things, yes.
Wow, this interview has gone south really quickly. No. what advice would you give filmmakers just starting out in this lovely film business?
Explore all options. Like there's so many things out there these days. There's so many different resources at your fingertips. There are so many different ways of putting art out into the world.
Mm-hmm.
Don't pigeonhole yourself into one form of filmmaking.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you could find that VR and AR or something that really interests you if you learn the trade, or maybe you find that, you know, you have a skill in photography, or, you know, maybe you even love doing branded content, who knows, but I'm just saying, like, as a creator, that is such a rare skill to have.
Mm-hmm.
And I think with this, as our world becomes more technologically driven, I think that, you know, that is just going to become that much more of an asset. So I think it's important to just explore all options and see what you're good at and figure out what works for you.
That's great.
Just because it worked for somebody else doesn't mean that it's going
path.
To work for you.
Everyone has a path.
Yeah.
Jess is going to kill me.
Uh-oh.
Oh no.
Okay. So I grew up wanting to make a feature. It was like my number one thing that I wanted to do.
And you did.
And I did. And I genuinely feel like a more complete person after having made it. And I know that sounds absurd, but
No, it doesn't. It doesn't.
I feel better.
Did you feel that the feature was a mountain, this monstrous mountain?
Yeah.
That you had to climb.
And I climbed it, and it was
You got to the summit and you're good.
Absolutely.
Right. You did it at a fairly high level for a first time feature, you know.
Well, I'm very proud of it.
Yeah, you did, because you had, you know, you had recognizable stars and you had a real budget. Okay. You know, so it was very, very cool that you did it that way.
Thank you. So I think a lot of filmmakers like us have that dream of the future.
Sure.
And though I want people to diversify, my feeling is a lot of people hide behind other content as a means to avoid making the project they really want to make. And so I just want to say, if you want to make the feature, don't hide behind those other projects and just make the feature.
Or vice versa. If you want to be a YouTube creator.
If you want to do episodic. See? Okay, diversification is coming into
If you
want to
do episodic, don't hide.
Don't hide behind the short. You know, it's
the
like.
The shorts. Constant shorts. Constant
Liz,
shorts.
These two things.
They go hand
it's
hand.
Like bread and butter. Okay.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. And now, back to the show.
It's like they really like
available now on Hulu. Wow. No, it's true. I just think that very often that like all the filmmakers come to me and they'll have this repertoire of shorts that they make, and I'm very pro shorts filmmaking.
Sure.
But you know what they really want to do is the feature sometimes. And I just want to say just make the feature.
And I absolutely agree with that. And one thing that, you know, Liz is just amazing at of encouraging is just, you know, the micro budget space is great, right? Because you're $100,000.
Which was incredibly hard to get.
Yeah,
but
that's a good amount of money, and you can do a lot with
yours
that. You know,
it was
under
a number
million.
That I can't say.
It was a number that you can't say, but it was a humble micro budget. It was a humble. Don't worry about it. It's a humble micro budget. But yeah, I was able. Let's just put it this way: with $100,000, I could have done a lot.
Yeah,
I could have done. I could have easily done 3 or 4 features with that, easily, comfortably.
Yeah, don't be afraid.
And there's nothing against it. Like some stories take $100,000, some take $5,000. But the Duplass brothers are such a great model for that because they literally you got $1,000, go make a movie on the weekends with your friends.
Yeah,
and if it's great, show it to people. If you don't. You learned, move on.
Never feel like you have to show everything.
But they did. You know, they made their first feature, and it was horrible.
I actually never heard that.
They went out, spent like $100,000 that they had mom give them the money and all this kind of stuff, and they raised money, and they put it together like this is a piece of crap, and they killed it. That they were that strong in character of artists to kill their baby, because imagine.
That's so crazy.
And they were so freaked out about that. Like, you know, we're just going to go shoot something. And they shot that first short they got in the Sundance.
The phone message thing,
leaving the message. They shot it in I think they shot it in like 30 minutes or something like that in a day on their consumer, mom's consumer thing and got in the Sundance. And then Puffy Chair came out.
Oh, yeah, and Puffy Chair.
Lena
Dunham's first feature, Creative Nonfiction, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I haven't seen it, but like everyone thinks that Tiny Furniture is her first feature because.
It was the one that got all the.
Right.
Like Puffy Chair.
Like Sherry, yeah.
Like Puffy Chair got. Now, this is probably going to be the hardest question. So prepare yourself. Three of your favorite films of all time.
Oh, God.
for the audience at home, Jess literally crossed her arms and pouted in the back and leaned back and pouted.
God,
like,
I feel like all of these questions are just like, just
these are
burning
what we call,
anxiety.
What do we call gotcha questions?
Yeah, no. They are.
Three that work that pop in your head.
What We Do in the Shadows.
Oh, so good.
Is one of my favorite films.
Okay.
I just think that film is brilliant.
Okay.
Wait, let's tag team this so we can each have time.
Okay.
Moonstruck, because
Nicolas Cage and Cher.
Because it's amazing. There's nothing else that needs to be said. Sorry, I should take them on.
No.
I thought I could buy you like 10 seconds, but that wasn't enough.
This is going to be such a cheesy one.
Go ahead.
We've heard
everything on the show. It's all good.
Romeo and Juliet.
Which one?
The Baz Luhrmann?
Baz Luhrmann.
Oh, that's amazing.
What does that
I love that movie.
It's one of my favorite movies.
John Leguizamo is really good.
I love that movie.
I love Moulin Rouge too. Strictly
Ballroom, I think is superior, but you know, we don't have to get into it right now.
It's okay to be wrong. Go ahead. What?
I've never been wrong about Strictly Ballroom.
Romeo and Juliet. We can have that conversation.
I don't know what I said last time.
I don't remember either.
But I really love Stuck on You by the Farrelly Brothers.
That's a great
and it doesn't get enough credit, and I try to bring it up as much as possible because I really love it.
It's a fun movie.
And it's really like done with love and care and absurdity. And
all of their movies
people
are done
should just go watch Stuck on You.
Yes. Matt Damon and Greg Kinnear.
Yeah. Yes. And Meryl Streep. And Cher. I should just think about their Cher movie. Cher. The next
Eva
one Mendes is Silkwood.
Mendes was in that too, I think.
Yes.
Yes. It's my obscure
name. And Frankie Muniz is in it.
Frankie. Okay.
I've seen this movie a lot
of
times.
Okay, let's stop. Okay. And your last one, right here?
I'm going to have to say Elite Squad. Gosh, I'm blanking on the director's name. He did City of God.
Yes.
That
Another
was,
director, yes.
Yeah. That movie hit me like a Mack truck.
Mm-hmm.
I remember sitting in the theater after I saw that and just, I couldn't even talk to my now husband at the time. He asked me in the car, what did you think of that movie? And I said, I can't talk right now. I need 10 minutes of silence.
I've had those movies. Those are great movies.
And that was, it just, it hit me really hard. It was a good, it did, it's, you know, it, I think that's what they were going for.
I felt okay. that after Justice League, in a good way. Anyway,
yeah, don't go see Stuck on You. Go see Elite Squad. That sounds great.
That was for you, Adam.
It's very deep.
Something just happened.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. It's a running joke.
it's very heavy, subject matter, but it's a brilliant film.
And yours last one, Jill? Liz?
Almost Famous.
Oh God, yeah. That was a great one.
I Jerry Maguire for me.
Both.
I think both.
Why
choose? I think you're right.
Yeah.
Jerry's up there for me.
I love Jerry Maguire. And Jerry Maguire.
Who's with me?
Gonna take my fish.
My fish. Who's with me? You. Yes, you. You're coming with me. Do you have insurance? We'll figure it out. And of course, Say Anything.
Yeah. Well, I love that one speech he gives, but I don't want to, you know.
It's just the best. Guys, it's been, we could talk for another hour.
Can I say one more thing?
Yeah, absolutely. There's one more movie. No.
There's one more movie. Actually, there's five. So, you know, sit down, get a drink. No, I just wanted to say, you know, in the Creative Distribution Initiative, we completely understand how sometimes it might feel that filmmakers don't have access to us being in that ivory tower. But
Sundance.
Yes.
You don't want to say it.
Sundance. I meant to say Sundance. I'm sorry. Yes.
But obviously your email is open.
I was just about
distribution at sundance.org.
Creative distribution at sundance.org.
We will put that in the show notes, yeah. Guys. Don't worry.
No, but I just want to say, I think we're trying to be a department that says yes and in terms of trying to find information for filmmakers.
Mm-hmm.
So if we don't have the answers, we do not claim to be the experts and have all of the answers.
We're very often not the experts.
But
99%.
We are willing to go out there and find the answers. We are on a mission to find sustainable sources for filmmakers. So please email us with questions or concerns, or if you want to have a therapy session, we're completely open.
Or if you want us to write a piece.
Yeah, but we do. Yeah, we write pieces often out of our department. And if you have a really cool story or if there's something that you learned, we're totally willing to put it out there. So please contact us.
But have you met Robert?
Once he walked by me.
He walked by you.
And I pretended to type.
You were trying to act cool?
Yeah.
You were trying to act cool?
And I was typing blah, 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 like on the screen.
Yeah. And you yell out, Bob! And just like.
He was wearing jeans. Right.
I figured that. That makes sense. It makes sense. Yeah. Guys, it's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you so much.
It's been a lot of fun.
See you guys soon.
I hope you guys learned a little bit about how important understanding your audience is and figuring out how you can get that data to be able to target your audience, especially if you're doing self-distribution. And even if you're going through a traditional distributor, you got to be hands-on when you're working with a traditional distributor without question. The more you understand about your audience, the better chance you have of getting your film out there to that audience so they can consume your content. As I've said many times before, the creative process does not end at final cut. It ends when you are done selling your movie, and that could be a year or longer after you are done with that final cut. So always keep that in mind. And as always, if you want links to anything we talked about in the show, head over to indiefilmhustle.com/218. And if you guys have a movie and have not signed up for the Creative Distribution Fellowship, you're crazy. It's a free thing that Sundance picks a few films every year and they distribute your film for free and help you and give you money and give you data and helps you get it all out there. And you're now inside the Sundance family. So why not do it? So go to the show notes. There's links there. If you have a movie, give it a shot. You never know what's going to happen. So, and there's not a lot of people signing up for it. That was one of the reasons why Liz reached out to me in the first place. So please check it out. And as always, keep that hustle going. Keep that dream alive. And I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening to the Indie Film Hustle podcast at IndieFilmHustle.com. That's IndieFilmHustle.com.